Sponsorship of this KQED podcast is provided by UC Santa Cruz, chosen by the National Cancer Institute to launch the Cancer Genomics Hub in the quest to decode cancer. More information available at ucsc.edu.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the California Healthcare Foundation. Ideas and innovations to improve healthcare for all Californians. On the web at chcf.org. And URS, a global engineering and construction firm working to improve California's public infrastructure, preserve the state's natural resources, and strengthen the environment. URS.com.
This is the California Report. I'm Scott Schaefer. Coming up, we'll visit the scenic Central Coast, where new congressional boundaries have a well-known Republican hot on the heels of the incumbent Democrat. That story, plus we'll meet a top advisor to Mitt Romney, who's one of the few Asian Americans in that campaign. And a quirky museum in Pasadena celebrates baseball's free spirits and forgotten heroes.
This is a place that's designed by fans for the delight of fans that presents a history of baseball as filtered through the imagination of the fan. And I think that's very exciting, and it's long overdue that we have something like that.
Also, poet Al Young is here with his regular tribute to the new month.
Who are you, October, that turnips turn sweet in your cooling silence, the color of ale?
It's the California Report. Well, the election is just over a month away now, and unlike the past, this year, California has nearly a dozen congressional seats where the outcome is truly up in the air. As part of our election series, What's Government For?, we're out to hear what voters say they want from their elected officials.
We would like to see more conservative things: fiscal responsibility, limited government, and adherence to the Constitution. And if you're going to compromise on any of those three points, we don't want you.
There are services that government provides that I don't think anybody else should provide. You know, fire and police, that's not a business. And you can't run away from fresh water and, you know, environment and things like that. You have to do the things that make sense, the balance that no one's going to do on their own.
I'm tired of them taking away my freedoms. I'm tired of them taking away my gun rights. And I don't think that we should have illegals coming in and telling us what to do.
I'd like government to allow us to be free to make the choices that we feel are important and to make them according to the conscience that we believe in. And I think that should be uppermost.
I think the country is out of control. I think government's too big. And I really think it's just a mess that they don't know what they're doing and they don't know how to fix it.
I think the government should stop their infighting, get rid of the Republican and the Democratic and all that, and become Americans for America.
Today we're hitting the road, or should I say the beach, on the Central Coast, where a hotly contested congressional race is underway. The new 24th Congressional District includes all of San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara counties and a little bit of northern Ventura County. One person told me that living here is like being in a National Geographic magazine. It's that beautiful. I'm standing right now on the beach near Morro Bay. Two of the people I come across as I'm walking along the beach are Gary Ubaldi and his wife, Gail. They both say they're registered Democrats, but he says open-minded.
I believe I'm very open-minded. I know my wife is. I mean, she listens to both sides of every argument and would vote for who she felt was the best candidate, period, regardless of party.
And what is Ubaldi looking for from Washington?
I'd like to see them prudent financially. Government needs to protect every one of its citizens. And I would like to see government make, for example, the tax laws equitable for everybody.
The congressional race here finds the seven-term incumbent, Democrat Lois Capps, in a tight race with Republican Abel Maldonado. The old district Capps ran in last time was drawn by Democrats in Sacramento to protect her reelection. It snaked along the liberal coast. Critics called it a ribbon of shame, Exhibit A, for taking redistricting out of politicians' hands and giving it to the Citizens Commission approved by voters.
Good morning.
The new district is more evenly split between Republicans and Democrats, and the desire for bipartisanship seems almost part of the political DNA here. At the monthly breakfast meeting of the San Luis Obispo Chamber of Commerce, Charlene Rosales, who works with the local United Way, says people are longing for stronger leadership.
How's the economy going to improve? How are we going to build stronger, more positive relationships with each other? And government does have a role in that. They have a role in keeping our communities healthy and viable, and we need that work to get down to our level.
Rosales echoed another comment I heard a lot here, complaints about political gridlock in Washington.
When people can't come to agreement and when they can't compromise and work things out and they take a congressional break with no major decisions and important decisions being made, I think the public is bewildered.
Thomas Wood, who works in the hotel business here, puts it more bluntly.
If the company I work for performed as Congress is performing, we'd be out of business. If I performed in my job the way Congress is performing, I'd be fired.
While voters clamor for substance, the candidates, Capps and Maldonado, or at least their campaigns, apparently have something else in mind.
I'm Lois Capps, and I approve this message.
Newspapers report that Abel Maldonado owes $4.2 million in back taxes.
Lois Capps didn't report rental income from her staffer to the IRS for 10 years. She said she disclosed the income immediately after.
At a standing-room-only debate recently, the negativity in this contest was clearly on voters' minds. Charlotte Byrne of Atascadero says she might not vote at all.
However, if between now and the election I see one ad on television that is positive, I will vote for that person.
You're that turned off by it?
I am.
During a debate that lasts about an hour, Democrat Capps and Republican Maldonado spelled out their differences on issues ranging from safety testing for the Diablo Canyon nuclear plant here to climate change and health care. But it was this issue of partisanship and negative ads that generated the most heated exchanges.
It is tough in a campaign when there are 12 different ads, negative ads, distorting my record. How do you set the record straight?
Those ads that she started running, frankly, I didn't recognize her local congresswoman anymore. Because those were her first ads that she ran in the fall. Were attacking my mother, my father, my brother, my sister, my wife, and myself on taxes.
But that kind of political catfight does nothing to address the concerns voters here are having, like what to do about the economy. That's a highly personal issue for plenty of people here, including those in the district's exploding wine industry. On the sprawling 458-acre Premier Coastal Vineyard in northern Santa Barbara County, grower Kevin Merrill describes this year's vintage.
We're walking through some rows of Pinot Noir that are being harvested in about a week. Pinot Noir harvest this year has gone really well. We have great quality fruit.
But Merrill says he and other growers are worried. Very worried.
If you go through the Santa Maria Valley right now, you'll see signs out in the field looking for workers. If you're looking for work, come and see us, they say. Nobody can find enough workers, not the strawberry growers, not lettuce guys, not vineyards. Everybody's short, like about 50% short of what we should have.
Merrill, who also heads up the County Farm Bureau, says growers desperately need and want one thing from the federal government, a temporary worker program.
Time's running out for us. And without those people, they're going to go out of business.
Merrill complains that while Congresswoman Lois Capps listens to their concerns and is attentive, she never really takes the lead on anything. Merrill likes Abel Maldonado's experience as a grower, but blames his Republican Party for blocking immigration reform.
The Republicans seem to get mired down in this thought that we're taking jobs away from people that are here and want to work. And that's really just not the case, and I know that from personal experience.
The new political lines drawn by that Citizens Commission successfully created a district that's more politically diverse and competitive. But so far, at least, it hasn't delivered what many voters here say they desperately want, a civilized and substantive campaign focused on issues. And ultimately, a winning candidate who goes back to Washington and puts the district ahead of their own political party to get things done. A recent field poll shows Asian American voters in California strongly supporting President Obama over Republican Mitt Romney. But one of Romney's top policy advisors is a rising Asian American political star from Southern California. As Frank Stoltz from KPCC in Los Angeles reports, Lan He Chen plays a key role in advising the Republican presidential nominee on foreign and domestic issues.
At the GOP convention in Tampa in August, Asian American journalists from around the country couldn't wait to talk to Lan He Chen. They peppered him with questions about Mitt Romney's immigration policy and views on Asia.
Well, I mean, obviously there are some challenges in the region. You know, China is becoming increasingly aggressive in the South China Sea.
Chen, dressed in a sport coat and open collar, answered questions easily until a reporter asked a more personal question about his role as one of the few prominent Asian Americans inside a Republican campaign for president.
I'm not really ever sure what to say about that. But it is interesting to look around and realize that most people don't look quite like you do.
Lan He Chen was born in Roland Heights, just east of downtown Los Angeles, to parents who immigrated to the United States from Taiwan. He is something of the classic second-generation success story. He holds 4 degrees from Harvard, including a law degree and Ph.D. Chen is a policy wonk, but also a skilled Romney spokesman who's appeared on Fox News to represent the campaign.
This is a race about two dramatically different philosophies. The president's out there saying he's going to raise taxes.
Fox anchor Greg Jarrett had asked about Romney's tax breaks.
Mr. Chen, forgive me, you're just not answering my question, so let me put it again.
Well, Greg, Governor Romney's been very clear that, first of all, we're going
to... He is cool under fire, according to Ed Chen, no relation. Chen met Lan He Chen when they worked on Steve Poizner's campaign for governor 3 years ago. His first impression?
Very clean-cut, very thoughtful, and very genuine.
And a tireless worker. Chen said what stood out was his ability to grasp and convey ideas on everything from healthcare to the economy.
He really took the state by storm by his policy acumen and his ability to communicate really complex messages.
He said he heard the influence of Lan He Chen in Romney's clarity and punctuation during the first presidential debate. He may have heard Chen's sharp tongue, too. He once ridiculed Obama's pretty please foreign policy in a tweet. Chen worked for Romney's 08 run for president before landing the chief policy director job this time around. Elaine Chao, who served as labor secretary under President George W. Bush, called Chen a superstar.
He's making history because I don't think any other Asian Pacific American has ever been as close to the candidate so early and in such a pivotal position. So we're very, very proud of him.
Even Democrats like Sacramento-based consultant Bill Wong acknowledged Chen's accomplishment and said he could play a key role in helping Romney with Asian Americans.
Absolutely. Asian American communities who are not familiar with candidates are going to look to people that look like them to be validators.
Validators like Lan He Chen. Wong notes the number of Asian American voters in key swing states like Nevada and Virginia has exploded over the past decade. Chen is acutely aware of this, of course, because he is a man who practices politics as well as he pens policy.
We believe the Asian American community is going to be very important in this election. And in some states, they may make the difference. And so we are going to be aggressively reaching out to the Asian American community.
Chen said he doesn't feel any special responsibility to represent Asian Americans to Romney, only to represent himself and the campaign with integrity. He said he's a Republican, in part because he believes it's a party committed to equality of opportunity, regardless of your background. Chen also followed in the footsteps of his Taiwanese parents.
My parents, they were Republican. They're conservative. But as with many Asian American parents, they were much more interested in home country politics than U.S. politics, although that's probably changed since I've gotten more involved in politics here in America.
Their interest in American politics may grow after November's election, when their son would likely play a prominent role in any Romney White House. For the California Report, I'm Frank Stoltz in Los Angeles.
Like many refugees living in California, Afghan Americans often equate government and politics with corruption and repression back home. Many who are eligible to vote in U.S. elections don't. But some community activists are trying to change that in the Bay Area city of Fremont, the heart of California's Afghan population. Francesca Segre reports.
Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar.
Hundreds of Muslims pray at the Lowry Street Mosque on a Friday afternoon.
A short drive away, in a neighborhood dubbed Little Kabul, cooks make kebabs and fresh Afghan breads at halal restaurants. On the streets, women pop in and out of the local markets wearing traditional hijab headscarves. Down the road, the nonprofit Afghan Coalition is hosting a forum for Afghan voters to meet the four candidates running for mayor of Fremont. Among them, Aziz Akbari, an 18-year-old Muslim who tries out his Farsi on the crowd.
Assalamu alaikum. Khushamdeed, mon brotheran, wa Khorasan Afghan. My name is Aziz Akbari. I am an independent running for mayor here in Fremont.
Rona Popal, the Afghan Coalition's executive director, helped organize the event at a local community center. The forum was designed to stir voter participation among Afghans who were never given a chance to vote in their homeland.
In Afghanistan, it was a completely different system. That's why they don't vote, because they feel like, well, whatever government decide, they decide. It's not going to be up to my vote. And that's really need to be changed. The people really need to understand that their votes count, their vote is very important, and their decision is very important.
It's not just that Afghans are inexperienced voters, but it's the ingrained assumption that balloting and the government are corrupt. Mohammad Tariq Madavi, an Afghan refugee who lives in nearby Hayward, says people in Afghanistan these days are often paid for their votes.
They're putting in 50 people in one truck or one bus, and they take them from their village or with the place to the voting place, and they're telling them, okay, put your vote here. All it's like this. There is not a free choice, and people are poor, and they're taking the money and going and vote for the guy.
Cracking suspicions about corrupt governments and convincing Afghan Americans that their vote counts isn't easy, especially when some don't understand English well. At the forum, Rona Popal translates some of the discussion into Farsi, including one hot topic, whether Kabul should become Fremont's sister city. The candidates also field questions about immigration and how to combat Islamophobia. Most of America's 300,000 Afghans came to this country as refugees and are now naturalized U.S. citizens. Gholam Jalani recalls his harrowing escape from political repression in Afghanistan following the Russian invasion in the early 80s.
I personally walked with my friends for 5 nights and 5 days with no food and no map and no money and no direction. So a struggle after a struggle.
In America, he says he takes the opportunity to shape government seriously.
As an Afghan, I love to vote. I understand how important that is to express your feeling and to express your mind and then go ahead and put it in action.
Jalani says he's most concerned about education. Other voters here worry about safety and health care. In addition to political forums, the Afghan Coalition is also creating shows on Afghan satellite TV about how to vote and YouTube videos in Farsi explaining the California ballot initiatives. Yet for all the effort, old traditions can be hard to break. At the popular De Afghanan restaurant in Little Kabul, some people are reluctant to discuss voting. But one woman, Zakia, who preferred not to give her last name, remembers being imprisoned as a teenager in Afghanistan for protesting the Soviet invasion. These days, Zakia says she's more focused on raising her 3 children than on politics. Are you a voter?
Not always. The reason because I don't have that much information about the person I vote. But my husband always does, yeah. So just one member of family and I vote, I guess, yeah. Not personally myself, yeah.
15-year-old Mohammed Mojadidi overhears the conversation and wants in. He was born in Fremont to Afghan parents. He's still too young to vote, but he can't imagine missing the chance to cast his ballot.
If you don't vote, it's like you're wasting the opportunity of something that could really change. Like, you know, you never know. It could, one vote could change the whole country.
And he says if his elders would just cast that one vote, they might feel more a part of American society. For the California Report, I'm Francesca Segre in Fremont.
You'll find lots more election coverage, including our guide to this year's statewide ballot measures, at our website, californiareport.org. Unlike most of the country, California actually warms up in October, even as the nights grow crisp. It's enough to inspire writer Al Young, who's composing a poem to mark the start of each month this year. He's back with us today.
Octobering. Bring on October, savor the light. Ring in the yellowing, ring in the red. Bring up the darkening, dial down the bright. Give up green trees gone blonde in the head. Bring on Pacifica, bring on Palm Springs, bring on Tehachapi, bring on Chester. Roll out the Gravensteins, bring on sweet things October brings in. Hey, ripener, tester of yesterday's pumpkins, this morning's kale. Who are you, October, that turnips turn sweet in your cooling silence, the color of ale? Who counts you in with her vivid backbeats? Bring on Olvera Street, bring on La Calle, bring on curl chiles, red, sea dark, gold. Roll out a moon-licked wee hours highway, all the slow loving a belly can hold. Bring on the wine countries, Napa, Sonoma, now in the pick and the crush of its fruit. Let future pop art at Chic SF MoMA out Steinbeck Times 99-1 truth. Bring the soft snore of another year waking, sweat wet from chapters of unfinished dreams. Bring on October. Bring on the taking of light and dumb time, life's stitches and seams.
Al Young served as California's Poet Laureate from 2005 to 2008. He teaches imaginative writing and creativity at California College of the Arts in San Francisco. Well, besides harvest and pumpkins, many of us associate October with something else, baseball's sprint to the World Series. And this year, both the San Francisco Giants and the Oakland A's are representing California in postseason play. But there's a place for the also-rans and runners-up. It's called the Baseball Reliquary, a nonprofit group near Los Angeles that celebrates the quirkier aspects and more unusual artifacts of our national pastime. A new documentary about the reliquary, titled Not Exactly Cooperstown, is out on DVD. John Leonidakis is the producer.
It's the first baseball Hall of Fame where the fans can vote. And that's really, really big. I think one of the great frustrations of all baseball fans is that we feel somewhat disenfranchised, especially from the pro game. When you go to the major league stadiums, the rules there seem to, it's like the airport. The rules are there to favor the facility and not the paying customer. So here's a place that tries to celebrate, not only do they celebrate the scholarly, but the irreverent, and they're trying to bring some the sense of fun back into the game that's been squished out by the pro game primarily with all of the money that's involved and the corporatization and the cheating and the hypocrisy that goes on from time to time. This is an organization that celebrates the magic of baseball and what it means to people emotionally. So it's very, very difficult to put into words. Some great newspaper writers have tried to write about the reliquary, and it really transcends words because it's experiential. But I think what I would love people to understand is this is a place that's designed by fans for the delight of fans that presents a history of baseball as filtered through the imagination of the fan. And I think that's very exciting, and it's long overdue that we have something like that.
So give an example or two of some people who have been honored that, you know, aren't in Cooperstown.
Sure. Well, how about Steve Dalkowski? Baseball's folklore lists him as the fastest pitcher in the history of the game. They said his heater got up to about 110, 120 miles an hour. And just as Steve had learned to control his wildness and was about to make the Baltimore Orioles in 1964, he blew out his arm. And he was sort of this mythological character, so they honored a guy like that. Recently, they honored Jim Mudcat Grant, the first African-American to win 20 games in the American League in 1965. And it's a multidisciplinary thing. They've inducted Dr. Frank Job, who invented and perfected Tommy John surgery, and labor leader like Marvin Miller. A lot of people think Marvin Miller should be in Cooperstown, but he had a very unpopular position in helping to create free agency that we see today.
Well, let's hear a little clip from the film, and let's listen to Arnold Hano, who's a sports writer, and he's talking about the baseball reliquary and what it means.
I think it is baseball's freak show and eccentrics, and it goes to the heart of fandom. We don't go there simply to watch a man hit a baseball or throw a baseball. We go there for a thrill that transcends the game itself and becomes something other than that. And the reliquary, in its ability to search out the odd, the different, adds to that. So it becomes a cultural experience rather than just a thrilling ball game. And it is a thrilling ball game.
And John Leonard, I guess there's a lot of, I guess you could say, weird memorabilia, some of which featured in the film. One that I remember, a bunch of baseballs autographed by Mother Teresa. Is that for real?
First of all, let's put these in the context. The reliquary likes to refer to these as curiosities and wonderments. And their provenance is somewhat questionable. But their perspective on these artifacts and relics is the artifact itself is not what's important. It's the story that it tells. For instance, there's the great artifact, the tortilla with Walter O'Malley's image on it, sort of a Shroud of Turin kind of thing. And while it seemed very absurd and sort of humorous, there's a great story behind it, and that's the story of how Dodger Stadium came to be built. And when Walter O'Malley came out from New York to take a look at potential sites, the city fathers showed him Chavez Ravine. They said, look, there's all this space down here. But really, there was a number of Mexican-American communities down there that were all wiped out via eminent domain to make room for the Dodgers. And, of course, we now have this great irony in that many of the a big percentage of the Dodgers fan base are Mexican-American. So that was their way of telling that story, which I thought was fascinating.
There is a section of the film that's devoted to what's called, I think, Barrio Baseball, the history of Latino baseball in East Los Angeles. Great team names like the Choriceros and Los Tomboys. What did you think was the importance? What is the importance of connecting that history to modern baseball?
Well, I think it shows the power and the impact that baseball can have on a community, whether it's Major League Baseball or whether it's amateur or semi-pro baseball. In the Mexican-American communities, and they were playing these semi-pro games, golly, from 1900 up to about 1960, and it was incredibly important to the community because it allowed them, the community, to come together every Sunday to celebrate their culture, to celebrate the pride they had in their community, and how to address issues of prejudice and racism that they were all facing, and community leaders would come there and meet with the people. And it's something that really transcended the game. It brought the community together. And I think baseball, on the whole, does that all across the country.
The film is called Not Exactly Cooperstown. John Leonidakis, producer, director, marketing director, casting director. You did the whole thing.
Pretty much.
All right. Well, thanks so much for sharing it with us. And that's The California Report, a production of KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. Our director this week is Nina Thorson. Seal Muller is our technical producer. We had additional engineering from Howard Gelman. Our online team includes Lisa Pickoff-White, David Marks, and Don Clyde. Our interns are Catherine Borgeson and Rachel Johnson. Tyke Hendricks is our elections editor with production help from Tina Lauerberg. Our production team includes Victoria Malleon, Ingrid Becker, Polly Stryker, and Raul Ramirez. I'm Scott Schaefer. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Have a great weekend. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the James Irvine Foundation, expanding opportunity for the people of California and supporting the California Report since its premiere in 1995, and the California Endowment. Health happens with prevention at calendow.org, and Chevron, committed to helping California grow by supporting small businesses and investing in education. More information available at chevron.com.